I will be contacting Mike Compton. I don't know if there's a better mandolin. I don't like to do best better. Who's one of the best all-time mandolin players I've ever seen and heard, Mike Compton. Nashville Bluegrass Band is a point of reference for you. He does a lot of stuff with a friend of the show, Joe Newberry. And Mike just does a lot of stuff on his own. And if you ever have a chance, we'll talk about this, but if you have a chance to see Mike in a setting where he has a chance to explain what he's doing and the tradition of what he's doing, please do that. It's a great, not only does he play so fantastic, he describes what he's doing and why, and you need to get all that knowledge up in you so we can carry it forward. And Mike's researched it well and does it to a T. Great musician. You're going to enjoy that a lot. I think if I pushed all the buttons, I have the mandolin monster. I call him the manster. I've never called him that to his face. I think if I pushed everything correctly, I've got Mike Compton on the phone.
Howdy, Steve.
How you doing, man?
I'm good. I don't know what to say. I've never been called a manster before.
Well, you know who was the original manster was that defensive lineman for the Dallas Cowboys, Randy White. Think back a ways, and I just thought, well, just come to me right now. So you probably never have been called before, but I think if you combine mandolin monster, you're the manster. But then you don't have to use it. You don't have to. I just came to me as I was introducing you, literally out of nowhere.
Well, you've got to say something.
You've got to say something. I'm vamping, man. I'm vamping to start out. So this was cool. We were talking to Mike, and I were chatting during that last song, and so many things I want to talk to him about. And I know Nashville Bluegrass Band, if I had to give a point of origin for people to immediately lock on to, that might be the first reference. Maybe that unbelievable, rocket shot of Man of Constant Sorrow we were talking before I plugged you into the board here, that I think that kickoff to the version of Man of Constant Sorrow from the movie Oh Brother, to me, is the most distinctive kickoff, short of Earl's just open pinch on Foggy Mountain Breakdown, I've ever heard. That, to me, drove the whole song, and your mandolin drives that whole bus, so to speak, on that big hit. And I know you do stuff with Joe Newberry, and we were talking about what you're doing with Missy Range. You just you do all sorts of different playing. And I think, Joe, your playing is the most true. I don't know how to describe this. And I want you, as a jumping off point, I want you to get into your style. And I would say Monroe, but it's more than Monroe. It's all kinds of different styles. But you are a great source of many of those styles, including Bill Monroe. And I said this too before we went on the air. If you get a chance to see Mike, he appears with all these different groups and combinations, but if you can see Mike when he has a chance to talk to you about what he's doing and why, that to me is where the absolute genius stuff comes in. So now, that's not much of a setup for you. All you got to do is hit it out of the park.
Yeah, okay. Now what?
let's talk a little bit about your, where do you draw your influences from? Like, if I were to see you live right now, you start going through a program and you say, I'm playing this, and you talk about the style and the key and the things that you're doing and the sound you're trying to evoke. For all the people listening to this program, if they haven't seen Mike live, let's talk a little bit about your style of playing, what you think it's influenced by and what you're trying to put through to an audience. Maybe let's start there. That's a small one.
Goodness. Well, my parents had all kinds of records when I was growing up. I've been a fan of a lot of different kinds of music. Certainly not just the hillbilly forms of country music. They had Hank Williams, and they also had Mitch Miller, and there was a Strauss Waltzes record in the house, and some Ella Fitzgerald and Ray Charles, and I don't know. Never did ask my parents where they got all of their varied taste from, but I'm still like those forms of music. At this point in time, it's heavily Monroe influenced. I've always been a fan of country blues, and I probably like the sound of slide guitar as good or better than most anything else. So, if I really had my druthers, I'd probably be a slide guitar player, but that would take 10 more years, and I don't know that I've got the time to spare.
Well, all right, so you mentioned Monroe and the blues in the same sentence, and that I think is lost on a lot of people. Yeah, explain that a little. I think that's lost on people today, and I'm not that I'm a genius about it, but explain the blues and how it got into Monroe's playing and how it gets back to your mandolin playing.
Well, it's not exclusively of a black string band trait, but certainly probably the most striking one, and it may be because of the influence of record companies back when they were coming through. I think at one point everybody was playing the same thing out in the country, and I think the record companies are the ones that made the distinction that, that you guys are going to play hillbilly music and you guys are going to play blues, and,
right.
and that's just the way it's going to be. But I think Bill drew from the blues tradition, note-wise and somewhat rhythmically, too. I mean, he talks a whole lot about our guitar player named Arnold Schultz that influenced him. And he was, I guess, what you would call an early ragtime performer. And I believe he played with a thumb and forefinger, sort of like what Merle Travis did.
Okay, yeah, I think you're right.
So it's just flattened notes, and John Hartford used to call playing in the cracks, you know, where the notes that the frets take away from you.
Okay.
And, you know, that's sort of, it's more like playing more like the human voice sounds when you sing something instead of it just being dead on, you know, major chords and major mm-hmm. sounds all the time. It's there's stuff in the crack. Is where the good stuff is, as far as I'm concerned, and I think Bill heard a lot of that when he was growing up. I know there was a lot of black string band activity around there. Of course, he denied it when I asked him about it. He just looked at the ceiling and drummed his nails on the face.
He invented because that's because he invented it, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, I like that. I'm a big fan of fiddle tunes. And have been as far as I can remember. And so it's one of the things that I get to do with Joe Newberry and some of my other old-time friends that I have not had an outlet for. So it's a lot of fun. And it's really difficult to play a mandolin in an old-time string band and actually make it fit. I think it was just sort of a stepchild that then they let play in the old time ensemble. To me, it's more of a banjo fiddle sound.
Okay.
So it, you know, and chop chords don't work there, and there's a lot of things that you can't do playing old time music that work really well in bluegrass, and you just kind of have to throw the bluegrass out the window when you approach some of these other things. It's not the same.
Mike, when you say chuck chords don't work there, you're talking about if you're playing in a bluegrass band, chuck's the only word I can think of. You're just sort of hitting these chords, and what you're talking about, though, stuff, for example, that you might do with Joe Newberry. You have more.
Go ahead.
No, you go. You go explain it. You're the expert. I'm just asking.
It's just an offbeat. It's an offbeat thing. It's sort of, they call it playing on the backbeat. It pulls the time back and keeps the accent on the backbeat. The old-time players don't like that very much, and it's not really a characteristic sound in that music. I think it's fit a lot more by playing old-time banjo-sounding rhythm in the background. I mean, that's what I get to do with Joe. It works really well that way, and, you know, and I'm getting an education there. So if I'm out doing something by myself, then it's going to be a mix of Monroe tunes and old-time rhythms and fiddle tune ideas and a little bit of black string band stuff thrown in together and whatever else is seeping in.
Are you, first of all, you must have a miserable time having to travel with Joe and play with Joe because he's just...
He's so hard to get along.
Oh, my God. He is. I've never laughed so hard. He was on right before IBMA ceremonies last year, about a week before. And he's doing cartoon impersonations that it must be like trying to, this is, and I mean this in a good way. It must be like if Robin Williams, let's say, the actor, not the, you know, the comedian, not the Robin and Linda, if he wanted to be in a string band, it must be part of that when you're hanging around Joe, because he just seems to always be right there ahead of you with something to kind of, make it funny. I mean, I love everything that he does, but I really enjoyed talking to him last year. It must be a blast.
Well, there's a good bit of animation that's involved. Yeah, you got to have a good time and to pass the time. If the other Robin Williams were in the car, I think I'd have to ask him to get out or either settle down.
Well, you okay, this is good, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about. I want to talk about, of course, who you're playing with, and we know the stuff that you do with Joe is just, those to me are just, I watch a lot of it on YouTube because there's a lot of it available, frankly, and you can get the, of course you can get the records of it too, the recordings of it, but those things where it's you and Joe and you just have that interaction back and forth, and the music that you just described to the audience really seems to, that lend, you're doing that so well. It's such a it's such a great feel. It's not, it isn't bluegrass, which is great. I mean, but it fits right in that description that you did, that, you know, you're doing something that has a historical, not to be, you know, dull about it, but what you're doing has a historical significance. Even if you're rewriting how you're playing the mandolin on it, you're still giving a nod to all those old sources for your inspiration.
Well, I mean, you know, they lived long, full lives, and did their best to contribute to the scene, and I think, you know, I think they deserve a nod.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that have brought it in, passed the ball and gave it to us to carry forward. And it, to me, you know, having the knowledge of where the material comes from, or at least some of the influence of the sounds, giving me something that I can latch on to. It's not fiction. It's not just something that's floating around in the air. It's a foundation, and it's still there as a point where people can go back and revisit it and hear it. And I think it's important to at least say, well, I got this song from so and so, and he or she was, you know, lived in Memphis or wherever they did what they did. I think that that adds a human element to it, and I like that better than just saying, and now we'd like to
exactly
do such and such a thing.
Exactly, and I have to tell you, my own personal preference is I love it when someone who's playing on stage, it doesn't have to be all the time, and if they're from a concert setting and they're up to do their 40 minutes and sit down, but in a situation where I've seen you so many times where you take the time to say exactly that, this is a song from this person, and it's almost like you're bringing that culture, that part of whatever, it could be North Carolina, it could be Tennessee, it could be any, but you're relocating yourself back in those areas and bringing all that influence back up, and then you play it the way you play it. You're not playing note for note what you might have heard, but you're expressing that influence and how you interpret it. That's I just think it's great.
Well, thank you. I know some people don't prefer the what's been called the historical narrative introduction to the song. One fellow I met in Australia a couple of years ago said that in his opinion that I had reached true folk singer status, and that the introductions to the songs lasted longer than the song itself.
Okay. somebody recently said we can give you 15 minutes for an interview, and I said I can't ask a question in 15 minutes. I need more than that. So I'm with you on that. I get that.
It was taken in the way it was meant.
Well, sure.
It's all in fun.
Sure. Well, we were talking before I put you onto the switchboard, to the mixer board. Should have a switchboard. I was watching on Facebook, and you just kind of did a, I don't know if it's a reuniting of this. I don't know if the Soggy Bottom Boys ever seriously physically existed, you know, as far as an entity traveling around. But you just did a thing with that original lineup that was, you know, the music of the Soggy Bottom Boys from Oh Brother, and I thought that was kind of curious, and I wondered how that happened. You explained it off the air, but you just did another round of the music from Oh Brother, I guess, which is to me, you know, it's just great. I love, and you mentioned T-Bone Burnett's influence in that recording, and tell them a little bit about that thing you just did as a Soggy Bottom Boys, and a little bit about the music from that, because everybody knows that version of Man of Constant Sorrow, and I believe 100% it's your mandolin playing that made that, you know, just drove it into everybody's mind. I guess it's just a great version of it.
That band name was sort of a catch-all group name for whoever happened to be in the studio that day. Mostly it was myself and Dan Tominski and Ron Block and Stuart Duncan and Barry Bales, and I think Alan O'Brien was in some, the late Harley Allen was in, Pat Enright, Chris Sharp, who lives up in Johnson City, Tennessee. Various, one named Jerry Douglas was in on it. Different groupings of that, those people mostly, just as a, they had to have a band name to be in the movie. There was a lot of music cut under that name.
Well, I mean, yeah, I recognize that, but still, it's.
So it's a catch-all, right. You know, just for who was in the studio, and I guess really the people that went and did the thing in Gatlinburg this last weekend were probably the core of it. Now, I got a call some months back from Josh Trivett, I think is his name. Or Tippett, I can't remember now. I'm sorry, Josh.
there's so few Joshes in this business right now, so yeah. He'll probably recognize who he is.
Oh, he'll kill me. he's a friend of Tominski's. Josh has had a career as a golfer, and I think he's wrapped that up and gone into management business, music management. But he's a friend of Tominski's. Tominski is a big golfer, and I guess he met him that way. And through one thing or the other, they fooled around and said, well, let's do a reunion of this band. And he told me and asked me, did I think that I'd be interested in it? And I said, well, sure. Of all the other things that went into it, I don't really have a clue how the rest of it went down, except that I know he worked really hard to put it all together. And we worked for a company out of Gatlinburg that makes moonshine. You know, I guess that people are under the impression that grass and moonshine go hand in hand.
Well, only one of them's illegal that I know of.
Well, in Tennessee, well, the bluegrass is more illegal.
No, that's what I meant. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, he and talking about maybe doing some more of it in the future, just to recreate the sound.
Oh, sure.
And there seems to be quite a draw. So I don't have any idea where that may end up.
Well, you know,
but
I mean,
it was a fun thing to do.
Well, sure.
And right now that gig is the only one that was on the books.
You, of course, and then I know you and Joe do things, and of course, again, Nashville Bluegrass Band, one of my all-time favorite bluegrass band from way back, and I hate to say that because it makes me sound old in addition to making the band sound old, but I just always loved that combination. Well, yeah, I know, you're right. We all are. But I just always loved that band and the sound. Everything they do is just so, it's just, you know, their name has made such a mark that whatever they do, but it always fits to that level of what they've done in the past, and they're just always so consistent and good and diverse, and it's just a neat band. It must be fun to be with them.
Well, they're all smart. They're a good bunch of guys, and you know, everybody shows up sober for the most part. And
there you go.
You know, Pat Enright's read more books than I've even got in the house here, I think. And
and Alan sings inside of his banjo.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's all good. We all stay so busy at this point that it's hard to get us together in the same room. But, you know, it's going to go out and play. It's a good group, and it always feels like being at home. But I still do stuff with Joe and the solo, doing more solo stuff than I have been, which was not really the reason that I started playing the mandolin, but it became necessary, and through the process of doing that, it started to turn into fun. I still work with David Greer, some of the duet, a couple of weeks out of the year. And working with him and Missy and Chad Cobb. And that's a new part-time band.
Lots of part-time jobs. And the thing with Missy, we were talking, the name is, and you have to say it again, because even though we talked about it before I went on the air, I like it so much I forgot it.
Helen Highwater.
Helen Highwater, yeah. And that really was a creation, what I guess... Was it late last year? When did that start happening? Within 6 months?
It was a little over a year.
Was
ago,
it a year? Okay. I happen to be. I like all the people you've mentioned, To me, Missy Raines is as good a bass player as there is on the planet. I don't care what musical form you want to call someone in from. She can play with anybody, anywhere. I just think it must be a blast being on stage with her, because she just, wherever you want to go, Missy's right there.
She's good, solid, and she doesn't complain, which is good. She gets up there and she does the job, and she does it with flair, and it's fun.
All right, so here's what I got so far from Mike Compton. Don't show up drunk, and don't complain. There you got two of the top rules for being a band member.
Oh, it's not just me. Ask around.
I would say show up on time, don't show up drunk, and don't complain. That'd be at least three of them, right?
Yeah, and don't look like you slept in the clothes you're wearing.
If there's four, man, we're on our way to a top 10 list on Letterman, I think, at some point.
Well, I'll just leave that to them.
All right, good enough. Oh, man. So what do you got? Are you doing some, I guess the festival season, I guess, is starting since the weather is warming up, assuming winter ever leaves.
It is.
And so you're out, I guess you're doing the solo thing. You're doing stuff with Joe. I assume people can find you doing that.
I'm doing some stuff with Helen.
Okay.
Helen for short. National Bluegrass Band has got a trip coming up in May to Czech Republic.
Really?
I'm going to be over there for a bit. I've got several camps, one in California and one in Italy, and I'm doing one here in around the Nashville area that my partner Heidi and I are putting on, which was an offshoot of the one that the Bill Monroe style camp that they had in Owensboro. So we're doing that here in September, 4th, September 4th weekend, I believe, and doing that, having some of the Monroe style mandolin players in a wad. I've got a couple of more camps out in the Midwest and on the East Coast. I've got a bunch of that stuff going on, and in the process of booking some more things.
Sounds like you're really busy.
Well, I'm busier than I have been. I'm also working on a couple of projects, playing through some more obscure Bill Monroe tunes, and doing another album of solo material that I wrote, and also, if I get it together this year, I don't know if it's going to happen or not, because it's a huge undertaking, this playing some of the Mississippi fiddle tune stuff that Narmer and Smith put out years ago. That's turned into basically learning how to play the mandolin all over again.
Really? Well, now, why is that? Why is it? When you mention fiddle tunes, I mean, everybody knows what you're talking about, but what is it about that style of playing that's put you in a position where you feel like you have to say you got to learn to play all over again? I don't understand that.
Well, it's the bow work, and the harmonies are a little bit, the voicings are different than they are in all the bluegrass stuff that I've learned. Rhythmically, it's a little bit different, and it's hard to play that with mandolin right hand, and style in the style that I've learned how to do, which is all based out of basically playing tremolo. It's hard to work that all in and make it sound like fiddle music and yet be on mandolin. It's perplexing.
Well, why are you going out and doing that stuff? I think you're in a spot where you're trying to. I'm looking down at Joe's back. Where you're still exploring stuff, right? I guess that's the point of what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, that's funny. Why would you want to do that?
Well, if it's hard, you sound like you're in the gravy train now, pal. You got all these bands going on. You want to go out and learn something hard?
Gravy train. It just sort of sounds like the last show National Bluegrass Band did with Doc Watson on the. They told him what song was coming up next, and he said, "What key is this in?" And Stewart said, "Well, it's in F sharp, Doc." And Doc just said, "Why?"
Okay.
He didn't put his cape on or anything. He just said, "Well, why?" And so we moved on to the next song.
Okay. Good enough. All right.
Your comment struck me the same way. Well, Why in the world would you put yourself through it?
Well, I
felt like for a while, being from Mississippi, that I ought to play some music, at least pay honor to some of the music that I grew up hearing down there. Most of the old guys that I was around as a kid, the ones that played stuff, played a little bit of Armored Smith because they were such a big hit down there. I mean, they were a huge hit all over the country, but the guys that played fiddles down around where I grew up around in Mississippi played Armored Smith tunes. Because they were, you know, they were heroes to them, and so it's just kind of been something that's been percolating for a long time.
Well, I think it's good to challenge yourself.
Well, yeah, it has been a challenge. I mean, I could play the notes, but it's not like playing music. It's just lazy and it's boring.
And when you say the bowing, I'm figuring that the bowing on the fiddle is something that you're going to have to find a way to do with your right hand. That's what you're saying.
Right, right. I have to have rhythm and have to have put the beat into it, something that you could dance to, mm-hmm. you know, instead of it just being an endless series of 16th and 8th notes. It has to have life. Otherwise, it just lays there dead. And that's the hard part, is to combine all those together and make it sound like music on mandolin. At least it is to me.
See, and Mike, that's the stuff that I love about what you do, is that explanation right there. You know, and I tell people, if you go see Mike, and even with the Nashville Bluegrass Band, they do give you a little time by yourself. The last couple of times I've seen you where you're on, and you're just kind of going through some of these things. But that whole, the way you reach back and get those other influences, and then because they're important to you from where you're from or whatever you've heard, and just the fact that you have to relearn a stylistic approach to what you're doing on the instrument, which you've mastered, but now you're willing to do a different thing, and you can explain it and make it clear to the audience as to what you're doing and why you happen to do it. To me, those things are just, I love that stuff.
Well, I think it's important to do it. Like I said, I want to make sure that I get a nod into the folks that created the music and came along with it in the first place.
Yeah.
Not for them to just not just be ghosts back there that are mentioned in a record catalog every now and then.
Yeah,
I think they deserve more than that.
I agree with you. I think it's great. I think it's great, man. Listen, we found out that Mike's on a different... Mike just realized that he's on a different time than I am. So for you right now, it's an hour earlier. So I've invaded your territory an hour before you thought. And
well, that's all right.
Okay.
You're lucky I was... through cutting my toenail.
Okay, well, all right. I've not done that on the air yet, but that'll come some point, I think. You never know. I'll play my teeth one of these days. People don't believe I do that, but I can play my teeth. If I don't have a juice harp somewhere, I can play my teeth. And wherever you want to go, whatever key, F sharp, I can do that too.
Okay.
All right. Mike, you've got a website, I guess, where people can follow you if they want to traipse around behind you at some point, don't you?
I do. It's Mike@MikeConfin.net.
Oh, that's good. Keep it clean.
That's easy.
Yeah, man. Listen, I'm a huge fan. I wanted to talk to you about this, and if nothing else, just let you know how much audiences appreciate the effort that you put into what you're doing and all that great playing and all the history, and even if you don't speak the history, Mike, it comes through your playing. People know when they listen to you that you're doing something that you spend a lot of time developing. You're not just up there saying, what's the melody of this song and I can play behind it. You actually make the effort to make all those other sounds real again and the way that you interpret them. Man, it's a wonderful tradition. I hope you always do it.
Well, I'll do it as long as I'm playing, because that's what makes it worthwhile.
That's what you are.
Otherwise,
yeah.
I just quit.
Yeah.
Well, if there's any mandolin players running around out there that want to do this, I mean, and I mentioned we had this camp coming.
Yeah, yeah, talk about that again.
That's, it'll be just Monroe, all Bill Monroe all the time. And that'll be in around Nashville area here in September 4th
okay.
through the 7th.
Okay.
MonroeMandolinCamp.com.
All right, that's good. Any others that you can think of, or just if they just catch on to your main website, they can follow you at different camps or stuff that you're
yeah.
doing? Okay.
Yeah, there's Midwest Banjo Camp, and that's in the middle of the summer, and doing Augusta this year, and Elkins, and California Coast Music Camp, and I'm forgetting one.
All right.
I can't think. There's four of those, at least. and I'm sorry I can't remember it.
It's okay. We can figure it out later.
Now listen. Oh, and doing one in Alabama this coming month down around Birmingham, and I forget the name of it, but sorry, Herb.
Well, listen, I've really enjoyed it. Thanks so much for being willing to come on and do whatever it is I do here. I just kind of get, you know, I just talk to people like I'd talk to them if I saw you on the street, someone to hit questions for you. So I think it's good that you were able to help fill in all the details that I wasn't smart enough to ask about. I appreciate that.
Oh, thanks for putting up with me mumbling into the telephone.
It's good. All right, Mike Compton, man, thanks so much, and I'll be looking for you down the road somewhere.
Thank you, Steve.
Just keep at it, bud, and I appreciate it.
Well, next time you're around, come up and say shake and howdy.
I'll do it. I'll do the shake and howdy, man. I absolutely will. I'll see you sometime soon. I'm in and out of Nashville here in the next month, just running back and forth for different reasons. Maybe I'll stop and see if you're at the station inn sometime.
Give me a call.
I'll
take you to a good Ethiopian restaurant.
There you go. I'll do that. All right, Mike. Thanks, man.
Thanks.
You have a good weekend, bud.
I will.
Bye-bye. There's Mike Compton. I'm so thrilled that I had a chance to hook up with him. Mike, I've kind of shot him messages over the last several months, and I mean every word that I say about what Mike does with the mandolin and the historical significance of what he's doing. And you can tell that, you know, even at all the accomplishments that Mike has reached already, he wants to do something different. He's going back to music, fiddle playing that he heard in his hometown area. And it's going to make Mike Compton rethink how he plays on the right-hand stuff that he's doing. If you've ever seen him play, you would think, how could that be possible? But in his mind, in order to recreate the feel of that fiddle bow sound, he's going to have to teach himself to do another approach to playing. And that's the great thing about guys like Mike Compton, is that they never stop learning, they never stop growing. And if you get a chance to see him, wait for the time when he can say, here's a song that I've done from this area, and he makes it so real. And he does. He plays great homage to all those great musicians and all that great style. Not just the Bill Monroe stuff, which he can absolutely nail, but Mike pays tribute to all the great musicians. As he says, it's something he's going to do forever. And thank God. Thanks, Mike Compton. That was a blast.